Hi, this is Michael Harrison. I had the opportunity to speak with former CBS Radio president and CEO Dan Mason about an exciting new sports talk media project in which he is involved as a strategic advisor and financial investor. VSIN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network. Dan Mason is a radio Hall of Famer who's also a consultant to iHeartMedia, serves as chairman of the Broadcasters Foundation of America, and does a bit of radio and TV sports play-by-play and commentary. Dan, tell us about VSIN.
I think it's a great product, and it's very timely with the Supreme Court decision now to overturn betting and let the states decide. It's a product that really talks about gambling of games versus the games. And typically, our vision is that you'll be watching a game on your big screen. Let's take football, for example. Mm-hmm. And you'll be watching VSIN on a tablet, like an iPad. And in a state where you can gamble, you'll have your phone in your left hand. And you'll say, you'll be watching VSIN, and you'll say, well, you know what? I want to bet on that Bears game. And you'll be placing bets on the game, possibly in New Jersey, where you can do that from your telephone and through an app. And you've got three screens going now, which is really exciting. Now, in Delaware, that you can't do that. You have to go into a betting parlor or a racetrack, typically Delaware Park, and do it. But the day will come when other states will follow suit. Mississippi is up for grabs now. They're close, as is West Virginia, as is Pennsylvania. And this has opened up a whole new game for everybody. And it especially can affect radio, because it'll be a terrific advertising category for radio.
Okay, so when you say you're watching screens, is VSIN programming? I know you're involved with Brent Mushberger, who is the head of this organization, and you're involved, I imagine, as a principal and as a business advisor. Am I correct in that?
Yes, that's correct.
Is it basically programming about the betting aspect of sport? Or when you say you have an app and you have the phone in your hand, you don't have anything to do with the placing of the bets, do you?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. I mean, this is not, I mean, they don't take bets. No, mm-hmm. That's left to the casinos. But if you go to VSIN.com, you can download the app, or not, you can download the app at the iTunes store, but you can go to VSIN.com, and you'll be watching the host. This is an extraordinarily large control center in the South Point Casino, where people, it's like a big glass control center where people can watch what's going on. You know, it's the glass showroom, mm-hmm. like the radio stations have. But you'll see the host, and you'll see the host behind the glass, and they'll be saying, oh my gosh, somebody just put $400,000 at the Westgate Casino, a bet. Now, on the Bears in the fourth quarter. Now, what could that be all about?
Okay. So
they're describing the betting action.
Wow.
As it goes.
How do you get that information in real time?
I think that I haven't got to the end of that yet, but it's available to them.
Mm-hmm. And it's both audio and video in terms of the product that's put out from this beautiful glass-enclosed, state-of-the-art showroom.
All the audio is on Sirius 204.
Mm-hmm.
It's broadcast 13 hours a day on Sirius 204.
And the video, I assume, from what I've seen, is on the website at this point.
On the web and on the app.
On the app, so you can have it on your smartphone or wherever you go, like most video oriented online endeavors. It has an app for the mobile, and it has the website for either the big screen mobile or your PC.
Right, it's really exciting. It's an exciting product to watch. I mean, once people watch it, they tend to get hooked on it. I mean, in radio terms, it would have a very high P1 audience.
I would imagine so. Well, at this point, I mean, how long has it been operating? And you're really out there on the frontier with this at this point, aren't you?
I believe it went on in February of 17.
Mm-hmm. And you have a lineup of hosts. I know you have Brent, and you have names, I guess, that are known to the people who are bettors. You see, I'm at a disadvantage in this conversation because, amazingly enough, even though I'm such a man of the world and known far and wide as a sophisticate, I don't do betting. I'm not against it. I just don't have a lot of experience in it. Maybe I'm afraid to lose my shirt. But
believe it or not, I don't either.
Okay.
I don't either. But they went. Their whole theory was that the art behind betting, I mean, where do these odds come from? Who are these people that make the odds? And they went out and secured most of the people that put these odds together. Like, where do the lines come from? How do they move? And they went out and purposely got the people that make those odds. They didn't get every one of them, but they got a lot of them. Then there's not that many of them, believe it or not, Michael. There's not that many. There's very few. And they were able to get a number of them to be able to work for VEASAN and their contributors. And it's really exciting to watch the whole process and how it works. But that's what makes the product so exciting.
And for those who have not experienced the product, the conversation, how much into sports does it get? In other words, give me an idea of what the breadth and scope of the conversation is.
Well, it's not about the X's and O's at all. It's about people who play the game performed with the X's and O's. Like, how did Max Scherzer do, who's a pitcher for the Nationals, how did he do when he was on the mound? Did he beat the line? How many times did he beat the line? How did he do under the circumstances? That's what it's about. And how many times did the Yankees beat the spread? How did that go?
And again, different sports lend themselves to betting in different ways, and a lot of it comes down to that thing known as the spread. Am I correct?
That's right. Like the World Cup performance, how many times did the under win goals? How many times did the over win? It's really fun and exciting to watch that. And if you think about the future, as more states convert, your ability to play the game for $5, $10 possibly, a lot of small bettors, it makes you wonder how long fantasy football would be able to stand up to that, because it's fantasy could become kind of boring when a small bettor can play.
How prevalent is betting on sports, let's say, looking back at the era in which it is not legal all across the country? Does it play a big role in the attraction and lure of sports as a spectator sport?
I don't understand the question.
How big has betting been, illegal betting, in terms of its role in sports fandom? Again, I say this as somebody who does not bet. I mean, when a game is on, a big football game or a big basketball game or baseball, whatever people bet on, have they figured out what percentage of the audience is prone to have some kind of bet riding on a game?
That's hard to answer, and I don't believe, I certainly haven't seen any figures like that, but certainly the offshore is a factor, but I don't know percentages. I don't know that research. I don't know where that is available. I have not seen that, and I don't believe that is available.
Well, I would imagine it would give an idea of going forward what type of audiences you would attract with VSIN. Because it would obviously be audiences of people that bet. Now, you mentioned earlier that it's going to be a P1, a very exclusive core. Is the revenue model advertising? So I'd imagine the size of the audience comes into play.
The subscription base is a large model, too. Like, VEASAN has a point spread weekly subscription every week where they do a lot of digest a lot of information and make that available to their fan base. And that's a paid subscription. They also do a free newsletter. So this information is going to be wildly popular, I believe, as football approaches. So that isn't all advertising based.
So there'll be a free component and a pay component to the products offered to the consumer.
On subscription, yes.
I see.
And that's available on the website, Michael. You can check that out on the website.
Right. Now, what about Brent Musburger? He's kind of a legend in the business. How did you hook up with him?
Well, you know, it's interesting. And Brent, by the way, does he does a two-hour show himself every afternoon, Monday through Friday. talk about the love of the airwaves. But to get back to your original question, Brian, I still do a lot of horse racing work, and I was calling to be an analyst on there as talent. I thought maybe when they came out that I would be participate on the staff as an analyst. And I met with Brian Musburger. I was in New York when he came to town. And the more we talked, it became apparent to both of us that they really didn't need me as an analyst in horse racing for talent, but maybe there was a bigger opportunity on the executive side as they rolled out more product to terrestrial radio stations. And it became more exciting as that could be part of developing the business itself. So that became the need, and that became a bigger place that I could play. Because I thought they had it. It was pretty obvious to me they had it covered on the talent side. They had a really good guy that they have there. So it kind of went forward from there. And the more I listened to them, the more excited about maybe I would want to buy into this company too, which I did. So, you know, I went from being a talent to being a part owner. So that, in the course of an hour.
Well, I certainly know, looking back at my career, if I had thought along those lines, I would be a very wealthy man today, as opposed to a man who has a wealth of stories.
I don't know that I've gotten there on this one yet. But.
No, but I'll tell you, again, you know, without having, you know, I'm not an expert on the subject of sports and gambling, but I am an expert on culture. And I would definitely think that this thing has the makings of a very, very successful operation, both in terms of its profile and also in terms of its ability to generate revenue.
You know what it's like? I'll tell you what it's like. It reminds me a lot about building a radio station from scratch. You know, when you've got a product, I'll tell you a great story. Mm-hmm. Years and years ago, when we put WZLX in Boston on the air, and this was before you got there, Michael, it was back when Gary Guthrie and I did this, we put WZLX on the air with reels of classic rock songs. And Gary and I were in a hotel room, and the board op just flipped the switch, and we went. Remember, we were the Cat before WCLX.
Right.
Remember those days? And then the Cat failed miserably, and it didn't work out. And we thought, you know, there was an AM classic rock station in Houston where I was living at the time called KRBE AM. And they did pretty well. They had a two-share with an AM format, but it was all classic rock. And I thought, well, you know what? If they're doing a two, then heck, maybe we could do a four in Boston.
Right.
But Gary and I put this format together, and we put it on reels. Then they just went. We just toggled back and forth from machine to machine. But we sat there and listened to it, and the board op was screaming at us, calling, saying, "The phones are going crazy. The phones are going crazy." And I knew that we just had a hit right away.
Yeah.
And this reminds me of that. That. Well, you know, when you have a hit with a format, you know it right away. You don't wait 30 days. You know it within a day.
You know it right away. It's that way with everything. As a matter of fact, you and I once had lunch, and I was telling you a story about one of my experiences owning a radio station. And I had said to you, I never worked as hard in my life in radio as I did at that endeavor. And you looked at me and you asked me a very, very, very good question that I've never forgotten. You said to me, "What do you mean by working hard? What does working hard mean?" And I stopped for a second. I said, "Wow, that's a great question. I knew what I meant when I said it, but how do I articulate this?" And then after sitting there staring like a deer in the headlights for about 30 seconds, which seemed like an eternity, I said to you, "When you don't get traction, when your work doesn't feel like you're getting positive results the way you want, it feels like it's hard. It feels like that boulder you're pushing up the mountain is hard."
Yeah.
But when you're doing something that smells right, feels right, you're getting the feedback, all the signs are there, you could work 10 times as long. You could be lifting heavy, heavy stuff, and it doesn't feel like it's work at all. Isn't that
exactly
funny? And it's part of what you're saying. It's great to have a hit. It's, and you know it right away. This does feel like that. I'll tell you, I think you're smart to be involved in this.
Well, it's got to be that way, the music industry, too. You know, you like, you record guys know when they know when immediately they had a hit. And you know, you've been around enough radio stations.
Oh, gosh.
You know, when you put that song on that turntable back in the days when we did,
mm-hmm.
and you put that needle down, and you know immediately when you have a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even have to think about it twice. And you think about all the record guys and promoters that and women that work so hard trying to move a record up the chart.
Right.
And then the other people that put that, it was so easy.
Right, right, exactly. Well, remember, do you remember the term that we used to use? It was in the grooves. If it was in the grooves, you had a hit, you know, whatever that means, it, you know, if it was in the grooves. And this is especially true with the internet. Things go viral. Things, all of a sudden, you know, for the strangest reason, you won't even know why. That's like the holy grail right now of metrics is, what do I do to make this thing go crazy on the search engines? And it either does or it doesn't. There are things you can do to help grease the skids, but some things just have this intrinsic ability to catch on.
Now, I will admit that mm-hmm. as good as Beeson's product is, it was helped tremendously by the Supreme Court. It got a monumental blow up the hill thing here by the Supreme Court and it changed the law.
Well, yeah. That promises to bring a lot of people into the realm of being sports gamblers, perhaps, who never would have thought about it before because it'll be easy to access.
And it's legal. They can go and do it legally. They don't have to worry about doing something wrong. They can go to their racetrack or betting parlor, or better yet, they can do it right on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're angling for.
Well, isn't it true, Dan, that for over the years that you know, betting has basically been illegal in most places to do it, you know, out in the open, that on radio and television, remarks are always made to the bettors. And that's why I asked about the percentage of people listening who actually bet. But it was done between the lines, the code words and different ways in which things were said, because you don't want to go on the air on a legitimate radio station in a place where betting is not allowed and say, well, for you, those of you who've got bets riding on this, the spread is blah, blah. You know, it's always been sort of like code words. And that word spread, I think, has a lot to do with it. Am I on the right track with that?
Yeah, it goes all the way back to the days of Jimmy the Greek. Remember that?
Sure.
But Las Vegas has pretty much had the market to themselves.
Right.
And now that's changing. Gosh, it's so darn exciting now to see what the future's bringing. You know, the first month alone, and it wasn't a full month, but the first month alone, Delaware did $7 million in sports betting, and the state of Delaware. The first day, it was like $325,000. And this was a brand new market, not heavily advertised. But just imagine when football season gets here, what that's going to be like.
So what's the deal with the Supreme Court situation? It's up to the states. It still is a state-driven law, but it doesn't have any federal opposition. Is that?
That's right. That's exactly right.
So what do you think is going to happen in terms of that? I mean, obviously, you've had this conversation with your associates, and you're thinking about it yourself because you have a vested interest in that.
There'll be some states that will be way behind the curve, I believe, like the state of Utah will be, for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I think Texas will be way behind the curve. There'll be some, like Pennsylvania, that will be ahead of the curve. I'm hoping that Maryland will be up there close, basically 2 years away. Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Mississippi are about ready to go. Other, you know, will be some mid-pack, you know, there'll be a state like Arizona behind, Idaho behind. It depends on the makeup of the state, of the structure.
But once it's out there and there are states, people will be able to figure out a way to do it even if they live in a place where it's not legal.
You can go, like, for example, where you... You're in the Boston area still, aren't you?
I'm predominantly in Massachusetts, yes.
Okay. In your area, Massachusetts is not, but Rhode Island is. Rhode Island is closer than Massachusetts. So,
right.
If you want to, you can go to a place in Rhode Island and do it. But you probably, if Rhode Island does online with an app, you won't be able to do that once you cross into Massachusetts, because your phone will know that you're not in Rhode Island.
Ah, okay. Because I was going to say, otherwise, the internet really invalidates state boundaries. It kind of wipes it out.
Yes.
But that's already going to be built into the system,
right?
So that states can maintain their sovereignty in terms of all this. So as a sports guy, and you're so much more than a sports guy, but you're also a sports guy, Dan. What do you think the impact culturally is going to be on the culture and the business of sports itself? Is this going to lead to corruption, do you think? Do you think it'll make sports more popular? How do you feel it'll impact sports in general?
I think it should be separate. I think the play-by-play and the people who go to sports games should be pure and separate from sports betting. They should be two separate buckets because not everybody wants to bet. People want to watch the game. It's a pure thing to them. So I don't think that the play-by-play broadcasting on the network.
Well, I don't mean play-by-play. I mean sports ownership. There are a lot of look how cynical people are now about institutions that are above reproach: the government, politicians, the church. I mean, we're living in an era where, boy, are we becoming wise to what goes on in the sausage factory, so to speak. Sports is not the most savory of businesses. Anyway, a lot of people feel that there's far more hanky-panky going on in the sports business than anybody would want to admit. How do you feel about that?
I think that I don't feel that way. I think that the sports are legitimate. I don't think that. I mean, there are isolated cases that go back 20 years that, and they were dealt with through the FBI. That they were. Criminal cases that were dealt with, but
right.
On a weekly basis, I don't think that at all. I really don't.
Well, that's encouraging. I would like to think that basically when you're watching a football game or a basketball game, that the result has not been predetermined and a whole bunch of people are in on it.
But I'm involved in horse racing, and I don't believe that either in horse racing. Mm-hmm. I do think, you can pull out an incident that happened within a 10, 15-year period that's been dealt with, but I'm on a daily basis, I don't believe that at all.
When I was a kid, horse racing and boxing were as big as it seemed baseball and basketball. They just the Friday night fights on television. I recently saw the revival of the play Guys and Dolls, and it opens up with the guy standing in front of the newsstand with the tip sheet and the horse right here. It was very big in those days. What's the status of horse racing today in the pantheon of sports?
I believe that you have to have a big superstar now. Justify was obviously a superstar. American Pharoah was obviously a superstar. But you've got to have a superstar. And when you get the Triple Crown status, then, the crowds come. The betting handles go way up. But what we saw with Justify was unmatched, unparalleled. I mean, that was a pinnacle for horse racing and a really exciting time. I'm so fortunate myself to be able to be on the team for Horse Racing Radio Network and Westwood NBC Radio Sport or NBC Sports Radio to be able to cover that, and to be able to stand in that press box and be on the radio with all those affiliates was just a pinnacle, Michael. It was an exciting time in my career.
What's the status right now of your dabbling in sports announcing and being a talent? Because you're going back into talent after having been president of CBS and major executive of big companies, and you still are advisor to iHeart, from what I understand. And this, but you're going back into talent. Certainly inspired me because I've been in the business end of the business for most of my career, but I've always kept a finger in talent. I've always enjoyed it. I've had people say to me, "What do you need that for? Why do you want it?" Like, as if talent is not some kind of a noble profession. And I've always said, I think being in talent is huge. I think it's a wonderful thing. What is the status of your dabbling in talent at this point? What are you doing?
Well, you're absolutely right. Like you, I love it. I love being on the radio, and I do strange things. I mean, just this past week, I was on the radio at a station in Ocean City, Maryland, on the morning show, which I love to do because I think the morning show is great there. Uh-huh. So I just kind of show up at 8:30 and do 8:30 to 10 with the crew there. So I just love that. So outside of that, I did two seasons at CBS Sports Network doing women's basketball, the 16 and 17 season. The 18 season, I did that for Coppin State, the university in Baltimore. Don't know what I'm going to do in 19. I'm looking forward to it, though, whatever it may be. On horse racing, I did the last two seasons for Horse Racing Radio Network and Triple Crown. That included Westwood One and NBC Sports Radio, which was so exciting. I love doing that. And those are the two sports I do, women's basketball and horse racing. So
great.
And then, like you said, I did work with iHeart, and I'm also the chairman of the Broadcasters Foundation.
Right, which we've talked about, and which is a fabulous endeavor, and one that I am as supportive of as I can possibly be, and I've seen firsthand how well it works. So, thumbs up to that. And again, thumbs up to all of your endeavors on the air. I think it's very cool. And as I said, it's inspirational to those who are out there making a career of being talent. That a guy like you is doing it, gives it a tremendous amount of credibility as a very important part of the broadcasting business. I feel funny even saying that, but I've learned from firsthand experience that it isn't always given the most respect within the industry. So what happens now if suddenly sports betting takes off and it's huge around the country and VSiN becomes a total success? Are you guys prepared for there to obviously be a bunch of competitors?
I think the competitors will always come. That's going to happen. But, you know, VSiN was there first.
Right.
And there's a lot to be said being the first in the space. And they're pretty far ahead of the game right now. There'll probably room, as it becomes bigger, there'll be room for more. But we can't be naive to think that there'll be no competitors.
Mm-hmm.
But and I think we're prepared for that.
Well, being first and doing everything you can to be best is always a good thing. Final question or set of questions. So somebody is listening to this conversation who's running a radio station. What does VSiN mean to them? How do they engage with you, and for what reason? What do you provide radio? I know you have an audio service currently on Sirius, and you have a video service that's on an app and on the website. Me, Mr. Radio Station Owner or Manager, what's in this for me?
Well, one of the products that is there for terrestrial radio right now is a Brent Musburger Action Minute. And what is really cool is Brent they report on lines. They'll talk about the biggest games and what the lines are, especially as we get to football. And they'll say, I mean, you might be in Baltimore, and he'll say, hey, the Ravens line is 7 tonight. And he'll talk about how the line moves per injuries, and it's really fun. Brent will come on and say, hey, it's Brent Musburger's Action Report. My guys in the desert are talking about the Ravens, and here's what they're saying. And then it'll go into one of the people in Las Vegas reporting on the Ravens line and where it's at right now. And then it'll be redone the next day. Now, from a national standpoint, if you're in a smaller market, they will come on and do just a national report. It might do two or three games on football, enough to fill up 45 seconds, which the report is a self-contained 60 with a 15-second national spot that VSiN will sell for themselves. And then 45 seconds of the national odds. Now, that's available to anyone, really, mm-hmm. all over the country.
So that's the connection. It's there's a short-form product from VSiN to terrestrial radio.
Right.
As opposed to there being, 13 hours of programming, somebody run it on their air or run a special long-form show. Again, I'm trying to get a handle on this.
It's all one-minute features right now.
So even on the Sirius broadcast, it's a series of short form features.
No, now Sirius is long form.
Got it.
It's totally separate, a separate feature for radio.
I see. So this is not a radio or television network for syndication or networking. It exists unto itself. This is a center and. For terrestrial radio, there is a short-form product. I got it. Now, what about that product playing in a state that is not does not have legalized betting?
That's perfectly fine.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can report on lines even though you're in a non-betting state. You can do that. It's perfectly fine.
I see. All right. Well, that, that is there anything that I'm missing that you would want our listeners to know within the industry?
You know, I think that radio is still an exciting product. And, you know, you can have so much fun on the radio. And we just can't, we just got to keep the fun into a radio. It's an entertaining medium. And, you know, it's still fun to get up in the morning and go on a radio station in a small market and have a blast, you know.
I couldn't agree more. So, hey, good luck to you with this project.
Thank you.
And there you have it, an exclusive Talkers conversation with Dan Mason about VSIN, the Vegas Stats and Information Network. For more information about VSIN, go to www.vsin.com. That's www.vsin.com. I'm Michael Harrison for Talkers Radio.